painted on the sign that welcomes drivers coming into Black Rock from the east on Route 7, waving. A bronze statue of him stands in the center of town, in the pose made classic by the creature captured on the Patterson-Gimlin film, mid-stride, head turned, looking back over his shoulder at the man with the camera, almost certainly a person in a gorilla suit. Sightings of the Black Rock monster flare up from time to time with long lulls between. It's as if the sightings crest and trough in accordance with some cosmic cycle, like cicadas every 17 years, or sunspots every 11. If the functions of the universe can be envisioned as a gyroscope, many wheels within wheels, then the punctuation of the Black Rock monster sighting clusters is a tick mark on one of the slower spinning outermost wheels. Audrey hated him. No, she hated him, the idea of him. She considered the Black Rock monster a sign that she was from a place too small to take itself seriously. Often, conversations about him that began in ironic, joking tones ended in the spooked swapping of unsubstantial anecdotes about such and such things seen or heard which could not be explained. Evidence, Audrey would ask, demand. Evidence. Where was the evidence? All we have are your stupid anecdotes about bumps in the night, the first-hand accounts of unreliable witnesses, and the rumors that circulate in the wake of what were surely either honest mistakes or cynical lies. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, is what her Sunday school teacher, when little Audrey, already a skeptic, told her that she didn't believe in God. Yes, but, Audrey, much later, wished she had said to her, absence of evidence is not proof, the burden of which, as a believer, is on you, not me. Later, when she was in college studying linguistics, Audrey would learn about evidentiality. Languages with multiple evidentials have grammatical elements, such as verb suffixes, indicating not only mood, case, and tense, and so on, but also how the speaker knows this information to be true. The Turkana language, for example, has five terms of evidentiality: first-hand witness, non-witness, non-visual sensory, inferential, assumed. For example, the professor used the sentence, "It snowed last night." Because, he said, if you go to sleep at night and there's no snow on the ground, when you wake up in the morning, look out the window and there's snow on the ground, can you say, "It snowed"? If we were speaking Turkana, we would have to say it something like this: first-hand witness, "I saw it snow last night." Non-witness second-hand, "Mom told me it snowed last night." Non-visual sensory, "I haven't gotten out of bed yet, but I can already tell from the quiet of the house that it snowed last night." Inferential, "I didn't see it snow, but I see snow, so I believe it snowed last night." Assumed, "I shan't bother to look out the window. The weatherman said it would snow, so I believe it snowed last night." Audrey would remember the small mountain town she grew up in as always evidencing a recent snow. In the winter, really heavy snowfalls can almost bury the stop signs. But it was the leftover snow that sticks around everywhere all winter and spring that she would most of all remember and associate with her hometown. On mornings after blizzards, snow plows and bulldozers scoot the snow into enormous piles against the sides of the buildings, and the compacted snow crusts and glazes over with ice. By spring, it's so hard it can't be cracked with a chisel. Gloopy cascades of icicles melt and refreeze again and again, eventually making their crawling glissandos from the corners of rooftops down to the ground. The gutters are always pattering in the spring. Black Rock, Colorado is famous for two things: the Black Rock monster and good skiing in the winter, when the town of 4,500 residents inflates to three times that from first snow to snow melt. All winter long, the locals play host to wealthy outsiders, upon whom the town's economy depends and whom the locals simultaneously hate, almost openly. That muzzled desire to bite the hand that feeds is there in most economies of seasonal tourism. The Black Rock monster is only ever spotted in the off-season, usually toward the end of the fall, which Audrey's mother used to speculate was a product merely of underemployment and boredom. A few weeks later, when the temperature dives and the skiers arrive in their glowing aurora of brightly colored nylon and Gore-Tex, the jobs return and people no longer have time to think they see mythical monsters in the woods. Hospitality and service kill the beast. The earliest sightings predate the incorporation of Black Rocks Township. In 1912, three silver prospectors living on the outskirts of what would become Black Rock claimed that a group of eight men had bombarded their cabin with rocks. One of the prospectors, Theophilus Phelan, claimed to have shot and killed one of them with a rifle, but could not recover the body. Many years later, as an old man, Phelan self-published a rambling, barely sensible book about the incident, which was sold around town in souvenir shops, alongside backcountry tchotchkes like dream catchers and mounted jackalope heads. Phelan's book was also, to Audrey's embarrassment, sold in the lobby of the hotel, in a niche of the wooden rack that held brochures for local attractions and maps of the ski lines. Her family owns a hotel in town that she kind of grows up in, which happens in the next paragraph that I'm skipping over. Theophilus Phelan's story had always struck Audrey as particularly ridiculous, and not only because, as Phelan details in his memoir, in his years and travels, he had also encountered space aliens and caught a glimpse of Ogopogo, the monster that haunts Ogaken Lake in British Columbia. What are the odds? But mainly because throwing rocks at a cabin seemed an implausibly sophomoric thing for wild ape men of the mountains to do. Prior to Phelan's account, the Ute Indians told legends of a giant hairy creature that walks on two legs like a man and is seen only very rarely and always from very far off and only at certain times and in certain seasons, usually the late summer and fall. They had names for the apparition that Audrey was told translate literally as the bad-smelling tree man, big, big, hairy figure with eyes sunk deep in head, and brother who comes back before the next very big winter. The most famous incident happened in 1961 when Brian Franklin, the owner of an auto mechanic shop and at the time a member of the town council, Audrey supposed Franklin's dossier as a local business owner and active member of the community, were in the retelling meant to underscore his credibility, discovered tracks, five-toed, 18-inch footprints, while on a hike with his son in the early morning after a heavy rain. He drove to town and brought back witnesses, showed them the massive footprints, and someone made a plaster cast out of one of them, replicas of which are also available for sale in the souvenir shops. The sightings quieted down for another 10 years or so, and then there was another spike in the mid-70s. Since then, there had been another longer lull. They were due for another wave of sightings, and sure as the clockwork of heaven, it came. First, there was a spate of overturned and rooted through garbage cans. People woken up in the middle of the night by frightful noises, something banging and rattling outside their windows. Even well-lit garbage cans, bungee corded shut, found the next morning with contents strewn helter-skelter across front lawns and driveways, especially if they had contained food or remnants of food. For God's sake, it's just bears, Audrey's mother said. She was spritzing the bar counter with Lysol and pushing it around in circles with a rag. Every other damn time something got into your garbage, it was bears. Why is it Bigfoot all of a sudden? Audrey's mother was of the opinion that every single Black Rock monster sighting that was not a bald-faced hoax could be chalked up to someone whose vision was too bad, too fleeting, or too warped by hope, fear, or imagination, mistaking a bear for the Black Rock monster. It would make much more sense to assume it was bears, garden variety American black bears, who were pawing through people's garbage at night, wouldn't it? Bears are real, documented creatures, absolutely beyond a shadow of doubt proven to exist, and they do indeed inhabit this area. In fact, anyone in this town who has lived here long enough has probably seen one once or twice.